Live from San Francisco on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network, you are listening to Wrestling Observer Live with your hosts, Brian Alvarez and Mike Sempervivi.
Are you ready?
Let's get it on!
Hey everybody, how are you? Welcome to the show. Mike Sempervivi here. It is Wrestling Observer Live. We're here with you every day. Live Monday through Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 7 p.m. GMT, Sundays at 6 p.m. Eastern, 10 GMT for those of you listening internationally. Special hello for all of you listening in on Sirius XM Fight Nation 93 and Dan Patrick 211. Thanks for joining me today. And as per the usual, there's no shortage of things to talk about. Not a whole lot of big news from WWE's side of the ledger, though, as they mostly have been setting us up this weekend for what's going to be taking place on Raw and on SmackDown as we bear down on WrestleMania. And I can give you an idea of what they've got planned for both Monday and Tuesday. And attached to Mania are many other events, including the New Japan Ring of Honor G1 Supercard that's taking place at Madison Square Garden Saturday, April 5th. And it is those two promotions that kind of had the high-profile weekend. ROH held their 17th anniversary show at Sam's Town in Las Vegas on Friday, while New Japan's ongoing New Japan Cup rolled on to the second round. The eventual winner of that tournament will face the IWGP Heavyweight Champion Jay White at the main event there at MSG. And whoever that person is, we know it's not going to be Kota Ibushi. One of the few favorites to win is now out. We'll tell you how that happened and who that leaves, as well as a look at what we've got solidified now for the Garden. And it's getting crowded, and there's going to be names left off. I'm not sure how I feel about that. There's news from all over the place as well. OTT in Dublin was on fire. Jordan Devlin, your new OTT champion, defeating Walter. The fifth UFC on ESPN Plus show took place on Saturday at the O2. The Young Bucks and Cody ended up in Mexico and ended up sparking a title change in AAA to boot. I can tell you about that. There's a new addition to the WWE Network beginning on Monday, a handful of WCW Thunders from the Russo-Ferrara era. Yeah. It's crazy. All that stuff. You want to give me a call? I invite you to do so. 1-800-878-PLAY. 1-800-878-7529. You want to tweet me? You can do that too. At SemperVivi. Give me a follow there. And while you're at it, follow at SportsBylineUSA2. Get this thing started. We get back from break. Wrestling Observer Live. All right, back on the program. It would not be a Sunday if we were not let off the show with Ryan and Cumberland. So, Ryan, how are you?
Good.
What's on your mind?
Well, besides the tax preparer leaving us during tax season, I got some questions for you.
I have a question for you first. How much do you charge an hour?
My billing rate's probably about $120 to $130 an hour, but I see very little of that in my paycheck.
Why is it all like taken out because you have kids everywhere, so the state is like doling out your money because you're on back child support?
It all goes back into the business.
Ah, okay. Sheltering yourself there.
Well, it's not my business, it's a corporation.
Yeah, well, what's on your mind when it comes to the business of the ProRes?
Well, my questions for you are, how do you think the Madison Square Garden show would do if it was Jay White against Shushin Thunder Liger, since I think Thunder Liger is the biggest name in the United States still, since he's the first wrestler to wrestle on Monday Nitro and had that classic feud with Brian Pillman, and I just think the general audience knows him a lot better than the current stars. And my question number two is, who is Brian referring to, do you think, when he said a lot of these WWE guys are getting lazy and not working very hard? I thought maybe he was talking about Randy Orton. It sounded like there were a few of them he was thinking that were like channeling out in the last couple of years that weren't putting their best foot forward.
Ryan, I want to thank you very much for the call, I think. On the second one, I will reserve that for Brian, and if you don't have a chance to talk in tomorrow because you are busy working on taxes, I will slide that along to him to ask him who he believed he was saying that about. But when it comes to the first one, stop it. Everybody loves Jushin Liger. At least you didn't say you didn't bring up Jushin Liger's legendary Nitro feud with Juventud Guerrera. But, I mean, you know, it doesn't matter. Actually, you could put him against Jay White because it's already sold out anyway, and what does it matter? I mean, we have Jay White against To Be Determined right now anyway because of the New Japan Cup taking place. So it really wouldn't affect anything, although as much as everybody loves Jushin Liger, everybody loves Jushin Liger. Jushin Liger could literally wrestle a broomstick in Madison Square Garden, and people would be losing their minds for it. So, no, I think that would be a little bit of a waste, especially when you have names like Tanahashi and Okada and Ishii and Ibushi. Oh, wait, we don't have Ibushi. We don't have Ibushi in the title picture anymore, unfortunately for Ibushi fans, as he is out of the New Japan Cup. And I guess before I get to the New Japan Cup, I'll just mention this. Ring of Honor had their 17th anniversary pay-per-view on Friday from Sam's Town in Las Vegas. It was a really good show. I thought it was a really, really good show. And for anybody out there that had a chance to see it, I'd like to know what you thought about it. It was pretty solid from top to bottom. Opened up with Marty Scurll and Kenny King in what was a good match. And Scurll getting revenge on King for sliming some victories out of him in the last couple of weeks. Then there was the ROH World TV title match between Jeff Cobb and Shane Taylor. And I don't know if this was Shane Taylor's best match, but Jeff Cobb is just absolutely amazing and is more than just a bright spot when it comes to Ring of Honor. And frankly, for New Japan, too, by association, because of their relationship with Ring of Honor, I thought that was very good. The women's title match between Mayu Iwatani and Kelly Klein was just very simply not very good. It was not. There was a belly-to-back throw from Klein on Iwatani that just put her right back on the back of her neck. And it was rough. And on top of that, it was kind of an odd ending. And I don't know if they went home early or this was the plan where Klein was going to be surprised, but Klein was just trash-talking Iwatani, who simply rolled her up and got the victory. And it just kind of seemed really wonky there. But then that led to what was supposed to be, I believe it was the Kingdom in the tag match against Haskins and Hot Sauce Tracy Williams. And instead, Matt Taven came out and challenged Jay Lethal. And that's when you knew something was going to be up with the ROH World Championship. It was just a matter of what was it going to be. Would we see a quick championship change and then another match later on? You know, what would we see? Because all of a sudden, Jay Lethal and Matt Taven is taking place right in the middle of the pay-per-view. And what we ended up getting was an excellent match, but a very polarizing one as it went to a 60-minute draw. And it was Lethal's 14th title defense of his second reign that has been going on now since last June. It got kind of a, again, like I said, a mixed reaction online. It pretty much got the same reaction that Lethal's draw with Roderick Strong did about 4 years ago, 3.5 years ago, when they tried this at Death Before Dishonor, where there was a lot of talk coming out afterwards of, you know, unless you're New Japan or unless you're somewhere else in the world, can you really still do a 60-minute draw? Is it worth doing a 60-minute draw? And there are a lot of fans out there that believe they could have gotten the story across and done what they needed to do in far short a time. But I thought the story was excellent, to be honest with you. I really did. And I thought they told it really well. And I can understand why people don't like it. I can understand you can make a case for why you wanted it to be wrapped up early. But I thought the story between Taven's knee and all that sort of stuff, I think everything just played together really nicely. And I think those guys did an excellent job. And I kind of give credit to the fans, too, because they really, you know, for the most part, they stayed into it. Once they did get the draw, they weren't frustrated or anything like that. They seemed to be very appreciative. So good job there. Rush and Bandido was really quite good. And it was one of those things where it was good, but I know it could be even better down the line. And for it was very, very good match. After the match, Roosh was challenged by Dalton Castle for MSG, so we got another match set up there. And then the main event of the World Tag Team titles, we got a title change, Las Vegas Street Fight. A kind of a surprise to me, the Briscoe brothers lose to PCO and Brody King in exactly the kind of match you would expect those two teams to have. It was bloody. It was brutal. There were a whole bunch of spots that probably never needed to take place, but they took place, and that's where we're at. So PCO and Brody King now go on to face Tama Tonga and Tangaloa, the Gorillas of Destiny, at Madison Square Garden in the IWGP versus ROH World Tag Team Titles match. And now I'll tie back together what I was going to talk about with the New Japan Cup here, because, as I said, Ibushi is now out as it stands. He lost to, oh God, who was it here? As I look at the results here, Brainlock. He lost to Zack Sabre Jr. and was submitted by Zack Sabre Jr. two nights ago. This morning, Sonata won, Colt Cabana won. Tanahashi also has advanced, Ospreay, Okada, Ishii, and Yoshihashi. And I've been thinking this whole time that it's Okada. And if it's not Okada, it's Tanahashi. And if it's not Tanahashi, it would be Ibushi. And now Ibushi's out. And if it's not Ibushi, it would be Ishii. And he's still in, too. And I still believe that. I still believe Tanahashi's going to go on, or Okada's going to go on and face him, Jay White, at Madison Square Garden. And I'm thinking beat him, but we'll see what happens. At least I have a feeling he'll face him. But with that on there, with Dalton Castle and Roosh on there, with Bully Ray coming out on Friday night and announcing he's having a New York street fight, and he's calling out the guy who he's calling out knows who he is, and he's watching, and that match is set. We're starting to run out of spots on this show, especially if you're one of the people who believes, and probably very, very rightly so, that we're adding a U.S. title match with Juice Robinson and Chase Owens, which means we have nine matches, plus the Honor Rumble, which is going to take up pretty much the entire pre-show because of the way it's set up. It's a Royal Rumble-style pay-per-view. And when you start putting the names in and you start seeing who's going where, man, there's not a lot of names that seem to be possibly sitting on the sidelines or being relegated to that Honor Rumble. There's a ton, including, as Ryan had said earlier on, Jushin Thunder Liger, who's probably was going to be in the Honor Rumble anyway, but still. And we'll take a look at the card and the possibilities for some of the people that may be left off that card, as well as your phone calls. And I know there's a couple people on the line at 1-800-878-PLAY. I'm Mike Sempervivi. This is Wrestling Observer Live. I feel as though I stumbled a lot in that first segment, and I'd like to place all of that blame on Ryan in Cumberland, Maryland. I would like to do that. But you can save the day by calling in 1-800-878-PLAY, 1-800-878-7529. And if you are listening to this show live right now, or the podcast version, which is available over at WrestlingObserver.com or SportsByline.com, hold tight, because we're doing 2 hours. Coming up next, I got an hour-long interview with Drew Cordero, a really, really interesting guy. Runs Beyond Wrestling, and he's got a new streaming television show beginning on April 3rd that he wants to tell you all about, Uncharted Territory, a very unique concept that is going to be going on for the next 18 weeks, debuting every Wednesday. And for 2 hours, it's going to be streaming on IWTV, and of course, it's going to be available on demand, too. You might be saying, IWTV, why does that sound familiar? Because you have used that service to see our fearless leader, Brian Alvarez, chop down people from across the globe, and you will be using that service again come WrestleMania weekend when Brian Alvarez faces off against Orange Cassidy for the Independent Wrestling TV Championship of the Internet? Video? Something like that. I don't know. I want to rant here a little bit about this New Japan card, but I don't want to hold people on the line too much, so we'll go to the phones right now. Dave in South Florida. Dave, how are you?
Hey, what's up, Mike? How you doing? How you guys doing?
I'm doing all right, my man. What's on your mind?
Hey, I was going to ask you, I have a two-part question. Number one, what do you think about Jim Ross possibly going to AEW? I know it's premature, and I might be looking too far into the future with that, but I really liked his work with New Japan. I know he didn't know most of the roster, but I go back to the days of the Attitude Era, and I think he's one of the best ever to call Raw wrestling on the mic. Secondly, your top five current female wrestlers. I think this is my top five, and I'd like to get your thoughts on it. I'm really intrigued by Tessa Blanchard. I like her. Charlotte Flair, Toni Storm, Asuka, and either a mixture of either Rousey or Shayna Baszler. What do you think about that?
Well, Dave, I want to thank you very much for the call. First one first, Jim Ross. I like Jim Ross. Jim Ross is one of, if not the greatest professional wrestling announcer of all time. And in fact, I know you can say Gordon Solie was a national presence because he was on WTBS for so long at the beginning of cable. But, you know, Lance Russell was so brilliant in Memphis. And Jim Ross was so brilliant in Mid-South, and Gordon Solie was brilliant for Georgia and for Florida, and Les Thatcher was great in Knoxville, and these guys, Bob Cottle in Charlotte, regionally, you know, the guys fit where they were, and they were all outstanding. And Jim Ross, though, unlike a lot of those guys, when it was time to go national, I mean, he was amazing, and he's arguably the greatest wrestling announcer of all time. And now that I've buttered him up, I don't necessarily want to hear him back in the booth. But I think he needs to be signed by AEW because they got a guy there in Alex Marvez who looks to be doing a lot of the announcing, who's never been around a wrestling microphone before, other than to hold one next to Conrad Thompson and to introduce these guys for All Elite Wrestling. And whoever it is that they get, and I don't even care if they have experience, they could use Jim Ross around. They could use Jim Ross as the third guy in the booth. They could use Jim Ross talking to these guys and producing these guys. But because you're doing something new and you're doing something different and things have changed, I think it's time for that change. And it's nothing against Jim Ross. It's just time for that change. So that's how I feel about that. When it comes to the women's wrestlers, you know, I'm a big Japanese wrestling fan, so there's a lot of women over there, Momo Watanabe being one of them, who is just absolutely outstanding. Mayu Iwatani was one of the top stars in Stardom and was great with Io Shirai and everybody that was over there. The ROH Women's Champion now. She's brilliant. Asuka, as you said, is excellent. You know, Charlotte, in her own way, is fantastic. Ronda Rousey, not as a wrestler, but as a presence. You know, it's pretty much undeniable, but I look at those women in Japan like Chihiro Hashimoto, who is excellent, and Mako Satomura, who, you know, regardless of where you are in the world, Mako Satomura is probably the best women's wrestler in the world, and she's arguably, if you include men too, she's really high up there on that list as well too. She's just absolutely fantastic. But Toni Storm is another one that Dave, you mentioned, and is absolutely excellent as well too. And hopefully, you know, down the line we start seeing her a little bit more on NXT American programming as well as being on NXT UK. Going to keep it with the phones right now and go to Paul in Barboursville. Paul, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing fine, but today you can call me Al Isaacs because I got scoops.
And ooh, do you now?
Joke, if you get that joke, you're old like me.
But, yes.
it has just been announced for WrestleMania weekend on April 5th. It will be champion versus champion in Chikara. Dasher Hatfield and Mr. Touchdown Mark Angelosetti are going to be facing off to have a one undisputed grand champion in a ladder match. And they also announced this weekend the dates for this year's King of Trios. It's going to be kicking off on October 4th. They're going to have 16 teams this year. So I know Brian's not in there, but if he can get in his ear for me, I do think we need the Chop and Roll Express represented in some way or form.
Paul, I want to thank you very much for the call. You have a terrible connection right now, unfortunately, my friend. But if for those out there who didn't hear that, Chikara's new season has been announced. National Pro Wrestling Day is behind us, and WrestleMania weekend. Everything begins again for Chikara. I can't remember the name. It's something like that is actually the name of the show, the new chapter begin or whatever it is. There's titles for all of these shows now. Chikara was one of the first ones to do it, and they're still doing it, naming their seasons. But basically, everything kicks off there, and it's going to lead into October where the King of Trios is going to be, and there's still time. We've got a long, long time and a long, long ways to go. We could see some sort of variation of the Chop and Roll Express and maybe even Lance Storm in there, which is what everybody, of course, wants. Going to continue to keep it with the phones because why not? Tim in Miami, what's up?
Happy St. Patrick's Day, Mike.
Are you hammered?
No. I leave that to John from Arkansas. But someone might want to check on Paul in Barbersville. It sounded like he was calling from inside a snowbank.
Oh, stop. Look at you. Anyway, is this the type of thing we get on your podcast?
No, my podcast is on En Fuego, as they say in Miami.
By the way. Your phone isn't much better, champ.
It's perfect. No, I did want to comment. I was going to let this go, but Lance Storm talked about this on Figure Four Daily, which was the WWE's instructions to the media companies about what they should and shouldn't refer to them as. And that really struck me because, like, there was a time when a media outlet covered WWE or pro wrestling in general during the Monday Night Wars, that coverage did more to help the media outlet than it did to WWE. You know, 60 Minutes would do like a segment and their ratings would go up. TV Guide would put Austin on the cover. They'd sell like 2 million more TV Guides. So I think in that environment, it's perfectly reasonable for WWE to say, if you're going to cover us and benefit from it, this is how we would like to be presented. But those days are so long over. And to me, this thing is like a symptom of the cluelessness at the top of that company, that they've got 8 million problems. Yeah, they're worried about the Sun Sentinel, like calling them the WWE instead of WWE. So to me, it's really an indication that we are not going to have anything really change until the top two guys in that company are no longer at the helm.
I tend to agree about that. Now, who's the other guy when it comes to, you're talking about Vince McMahon and who?
Kevin Dunn.
Well, that's truth right there, and I want to thank you very much for the call. I mean, this is just what they do. Now, when it comes to the media, I guess they can choose how they want to play it. I guess it really depends on who's covering it, because, you know, a lot of these types of things, you just get your talking points from, you know, the agent or the production company or whoever it is when they do these, you know, they do a lot of these cheesecake segments during morning shows and for noon shows and things like that. So, I mean, you know, if you get an old wrestling fan in there, they're going to talk about wrestling. If not, they'll just kind of smile and nod and say the WWE's catchphrases and go out the door. I mean, the fact that they spend so much time on it, though, I mean, I'll agree about that is ridiculous, but it just, you know, I kind of shake my head at this point. I mean, it's just one of those things. It's like adding too many layers to stories that don't need them, like the two of their big matches leading into WrestleMania with Ronda and Charlotte and Becky Lynch and this other one with Kofi Kingston and Daniel Bryan. They just can't help themselves, and they've never been able to help themselves when it comes to trying to distance themselves from pro wrestling. It's just ridiculous. Just want to turn real quick again. The IWGP title, the ROH title in a ladder match, Jay Lethal, Matt Taven, Marty Scurll, King and PCO, Gorillas of Destiny, Cobb and Ospreay, Iwatani defending the ROH women's title, Castle and Roosh, an IWGP junior title three-way between Taiji Ishimori, Dragon Lee, and Bandito, a New York street fight for Bully Ray, and the U.S. title with Juice Robinson and Chase Owens. It's nine matches. How many matches are you going to have? I'm thinking 12. And if it's 12, boy, there's going to be some people left off this show. When we get back from break, I'm kind of going to give you an idea on what I'm thinking, because this has just been driving me nuts. I started thinking about it before the show, and I can't get it out of my head. And all these other notes here, I don't care, because there's going to be big names who are not featured on this show, and it's probably going to piss people off. And I want to know which ones they're going to be. And I want to know from you. 1-800-878-PLAY, 1-800-878-7529. Come on back.
You are listening to Wrestling Observer Live with Brian Alvarez and Mike Sempervivi on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network.
Back here on the show, every other sane person in the world is doing an insane thing playing bracketology right now. And I'm still fumbling around like it's a drunken big board here trying to move names around for this MSG title show, or G1 show coming up here with Ring of Honor. It's killing me. And I'll get to that in a minute, but I don't want to be a liar with everything I mentioned earlier on in the show, because there is a lot of news that's going on, not the least of which was a UFC show getting overshadowed by other things that took place on that show, one planned, the other unplanned. First, during the broadcast, it was real Michael Bisping's going to be entering the UFC's Hall of Fame. And this was the UFC in London O2 show on ESPN Plus on Saturday. And well-deserved. Bisping was the UFC's first UK superstar, 17-0 in his career fighting in the UK, 7-0 while in the UFC. The Ultimate Fighter 3 winner, when that was still a well-publicized, highly watched, very important program. This is a dude who just knew how to sell himself and how to sell his fights. What an evolution from a young trash talking guy to a proper company spokesman, you know. And he had that story too, where all the talk, all the action, all the accolades, all that stuff, but he always came short of the ultimate prize or moment. And in a couple of cases, like with Henderson and Silva and Sonnen and Belfort, those were bitter because those guys may or may not have had some chemical advantages over him in those fights. And he ended up being a guy in the true twilight of his career who ended up getting that moment on like 17 days notice or whatever it was, knowing literally it was the last opportunity of his career. And it took him 216 seconds to knock out Luke Rockhold, win the middleweight title. And then he got revenge on Dan Henderson to boot. Not in the same way he got embarrassed so famously at UFC 100, but still, evening the score. So that was the one thing that kind of overshadowed some of the stuff that took place. The other thing was the main event, which featured Jorge Masvidal knocking out Darren Till in the second round. That would be the story because that was a big fight for Till, and Masvidal just completely upset the apple cart a little bit, but the big deal about it was Masvidal was doing an interview backstage with ESPN, and as he was doing it, Leon Edwards, who beat Gunnar Nelson by split decision in the semi-main event, said something to him. It's not exactly clear at this point what he said to him, but whatever it was, Masvidal wasn't willing to let it go. He follows Edwards. Edwards turns around, starts coming back to him. Masvidal starts throwing punches. Then Edwards threw some punches, and the two were separated, and it ends up being that Edwards was busted open underneath his left eye. So I don't know how it works over in the UK, the MMA Federation or whatever it is, but it's very possible that some of that $100,000 performance bonus that Masvidal got for knocking Till out is going to be coming back out of his pocket. It does raise the question, too, of what comes next over in that division. Ben Askren had traveled over to the UK, as he said he would a couple weeks ago after his fight with Robbie Lawler, and thought that a fight with the Masvidal-Till winner would make sense. And it may, except for the fact that under the circumstances, Masvidal looks like he should be fighting Edwards next, like for real, like legitimately in the octagon. And the next title fight is set with Usman and Colby Covington. And Stephen Thompson is fighting Anthony Pettis on March 23rd, so he's out for right now. And Rafael Dos Anjos, who's also in the top 10, he seems like he's at this point a better suited to face Darren Till, I think, with both guys working for a little bit of ranking redemption. So what does that leave? It leaves Tyrone Woodley, who Askren's not going to fight because they're crew, and Ponzan Nibibo, who I can never say his damn name, Santiago Ponzinibbio, who wants him next, or wants Woodley next. So what does that leave? Leaves the rematch with Robbie Lawler, Ben. I know you don't want it. I don't blame you for not wanting it, but it's like the only thing that's there for you. So it makes the most sense. It makes the most money, and is certainly a pay-per-view main event. I honestly believe that if you wanted to market that and have some things underneath it, I think that's something. It may doesn't have to do bonkers numbers or anything like that, but I think you can get a couple hundred thousand out of that if you promote it properly. And something tells me Ben Askren and Robbie Lawler can go ahead and promote that one properly, no matter if the UFC gets in the way or not. The Young Bucks won the AAA Tag Team title Saturday night at Rey de Reyes, after the Lucha Brothers defeated Rey Escorpión and El Tejano to win the titles in the main event. Conan came out, confronted them. The lights went out. When they came back on, the Young Bucks were there. An impromptu match started. The Young Bucks win the tag team titles after hitting the Meltzer driver on Pentagon Jr. So a short match, and that happened. So builds up more for the Double or Nothing match that the Young Bucks have coming up against the Lucha Brothers. Cody also appeared on the show, and unlike the Young Bucks, who were treated as heels, looks like Cody's going to be a baby face as he was attacked by Conan and Taurus, Rey Escorpión, and El Tejano Jr. Cody, before getting beaten up, said he'd like to bring Kenny Omega and Chris Jericho to AAA. We'll have to ask Dr. Lucha about that, because they seem like two very real possibilities to maybe make an appearance for AAA. Oh, I don't know. Maybe during Triple Mania might be a good time for that. So we'll have to ask him this upcoming week on the show. WWE SmackDown for Tuesday, Bankers Life Fieldhouse in Indianapolis. Kofi Kingston's gauntlet match is going to kick off the show. It is, as I almost stumbled here and almost read you his gauntlet before the Elimination Chamber, but it's Randy Orton, Samoa Joe, Cesaro, Sheamus, and Rowan. The story is that Kingston needs to win the gauntlet to challenge Daniel Bryan for the WWE title at WrestleMania. It is still possible that he wins the gauntlet and still gets something thrown in his way, as we are still 3 weeks away, so who knows what can happen there. They have announced another segment, as well as The Miz is going to respond to Shane McMahon after Shane turned heel and attacked him at Fastlane. So we'll find out how The Miz feels about his feelings for Tuesday night. Raw, Kurt Angle hopefully reveals who his opponent is going to be for WrestleMania. It's hard for me to believe that it's not going to be John Cena. I mean, who else is it going to be for both of those guys? If it's not each other, what do you got? So OTT Scrapper Mania 5, I won't give you all the details on this because I don't have a lot of details right now, other than it was an awesome-looking show on paper. And if you saw the clips of Jordan Devlin defeating Walter for the OTT Championship, it was one of the best reactions you'll ever want to see. And however many people were there, it sounded by like a million of them. As Devlin wins the match, it has been called the biggest event and the biggest match in Irish pro wrestling history. And it sure as hell came across that way. So Jordan Devlin is your new OTT champion. The card was loaded. Talked about Mako Satomura earlier. She defeated Martina. And then they both drank afterwards because Session Moth Martina. What else are you going to do? David Starr was on the show defeating Dan Barry. There was a ton of stuff on there. British Strong Style was over from the NXT UK. Pete Dunne, Trent Seven, Tyler Bate defeated the Kings of the North in a OTT six-man tag team championship loser leave town match. Aussie Open opened up the show. They won. You'll hear that name again coming up in the next hour when I interview Beyond Wrestling's Drew Cordero. Aussie Open is also going to be on the very first Uncharted Territory show, which is going to be beginning April 3rd on IWTV. Hurricane Helms was over on that show as well, too. So I'm really looking forward to seeing that one and listening to people like Alan Farrell talk about it, because it looked like it was just a hell of a show, and looks like it's, from how it sounds, has been the pinnacle of Irish pro wrestling. So a lot of good stuff happening all over the world that's got absolutely nothing to do with WWE. Evolve, I do want to note that Josh Briggs suffered a dislocated hip Saturday night at Evolve 124 in his match against AR Fox. According to his Twitter today, he feels as though he'll be out for at least 2 or 3 months of painful recovery, in his words. It was also announced at that show that Austin Theory is going to be defending his Evolve title against Kyle O'Reilly WrestleMania weekend on Thursday, April 4th. That show is going to be taking place, in fact, head up with the Chikara show that Paul talked about earlier, Once Upon Beginning, because they're both going to be taking place on Thursday at noon. The Evolve show is going to be taking place at Laboom over in Queens. Austin Theory unsuccessfully challenged for J.D. Drake's WWN Championship on Saturday. Theory is the Evolve champion and basically just kind of blew off the loss and said, well, I don't really work that hard if my title's not on the line. There's nobody here that can challenge me anyway. Nobody on the indies. Nobody in NXT. And, of course, that brought up the video with the Undisputed Era and Kyle O'Reilly answering that challenge. Going to hit the phones again real quick. Going to go to John in Arkansas. John, how are you?
I am great, Mike. And to Tim Miami, no, I have not invited at all. And I was completely on board with Tim's opinion earlier as far as the two subjects he was mentioning. Now, going back to the MMA story with UFC, what's Masvidal's deal? Is he just a perpetual hothead?
That's what Dave said last night on Observer Radio. I mean, that's just the case. I mean, I guess if there's one positive for him, he did it outside of a commissioned state, so maybe he's going to get some leeway there, but I don't know what to tell you on that one.
I guess he won't be bringing back part of that bonus with him on the flight home. So, man, this is just a wild week of incredible stuff. I tell you, the guy that just has impressed me more and more, and after these clips that I've seen over the weekend, Jordan Devlin. My gosh, this guy has just got star all over him. And I can hardly wait to see what this guy does going forward. I really would love to personally see him in a bout with Finn Balor again. I think it would be just outstanding.
John, over here, I hate to cut you off, but I got William on the line, too, and some other things I want to get to. So, yeah, I mean, it's possible. Look, he's one of the guys on the short list of a lot of companies, including WWE's radar. So sooner or later, it wouldn't surprise me at all if that's where he ends up. But well, take it over to William real quick. William, how are you?
I'm doing good, Mike. How are you?
Not too bad. What's on your mind?
Yes, I was calling to ask you if you think, like, Sami Zayn will be the mystery partner for Finn Balor tomorrow against Lashley and Rush. And if so, do you think it will lead to a three-way between those three at WrestleMania with Balor as the demon, since they're advertising him locally as that, or possibly a four-way with Leo Rush included?
Well, thank you very much for the call. I actually thought, you know, Finn, he would be perfect to actually come out there. He really, really would to be the partner of Finn. I know Kevin Owens is over on SmackDown. They're going to do a shakeup after Mania anyway. It doesn't really matter. We just got to get through the next couple of weeks. So if he pops back up on Raw as a good guy, I'm all for it. And even if he's not a good guy and he turns on Finn and it starts some sort of action, I am all good with that because I can see them doing a three-way at WrestleMania. I can't really see Leo Rush involved unless it's to cause some interference either to help or hurt Lashley, depending on if Lashley beats him up again. But I think that's the direction you can go, and you can even poke a little bit of fun at when it was one of the worst feuds of last year, which was Sami Zayn and Bobby Lashley. Man, I didn't even get a chance to rant a whole lot about this ROH show. Look, this is what I'm thinking. Tanahashi and Ibushi is going to be one of the matches, okay? Because I think Okada's going to win this thing, so he gets the shot at Jay White, which means you only have a couple matches for a lot of guys. Bushi, Naito, Evil, Sonata against Minoru Suzuki, Davey Boy Smith, Lance Archer, and Zack Sabre Jr. The Briscoes against Ishii and Goto. That could be 12 matches right there. But the problem is, where's Goto? Where's Liger? Where's Haskins, Gresham, Williams, Evil, Sonata? Well, I guess I did say them. But there's still a ton of guys that need matches. I don't know. We'll have to see how everything shakes out, how long that show is going to be, but this show can't be that long. In fact, it's got to go to break right now. We'll do that. Wrestling Observer Live.
You are listening to Wrestling Observer Live with Brian Alvarez and Mike Sempervivi on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network.
Apache, the incredible Bongo Band. It doesn't get any better than that. Mike Sempervivi, Wrestling Observer Live. I'm going to have plenty of time to rant about this show this week. And I'm interested, even though the big boss man, Brian Alvarez, will be with me for the rest of the week, and he'll try to be holding court. I want to know what you think coming up about this ROH New Japan card this week, either on my Twitter, at Sempervivi. Hit me off there. If you're a member of WrestlingObserver.com, do it in the forum for the radio show section. Get at me some kind of way. I want to know, because, again, how many matches are they going to have, and who's going to be left off? If Naito's in a multi-man match, how can he defend the IC title? Should Evil and Sonata be facing off against the Briscoes or being in a match with Ishii and Goto? You got Sho and Yo, the IWGP Junior Tag Team Champions. They won't be on there. What about Shingo? Forget about the old guys. Kojima, Nagata, Tenzan, Nakanishi, Tiger Mask, Honma. Who even makes it over here? A lot of questions, not the least of which are, what about those other ROH guys? How big is this Honor Rumble going to be? If you're Haskins or Gresham or Williams, is that beneath them to be appearing? I mean, they should be on the Garden main show, like all those guys that much. I don't know. We got a couple weeks to go on it. We'll have to see what happens, but ton of news. Raw tomorrow night. I didn't get into the Raw preview other than the Kurt Angle deal because I know that's going to be a big one. And, hey, if you're listening live right now, hold tight because we're going to be back for a second hour. Joining me, Drew Cordero, talking about Beyond Wrestling and his new show, Uncharted Territory. All right, welcome back to Wrestling Observer Live. Mike Sempervivi here with you. And Uncharted Territory is a brand new weekly wrestling program coming to independentwrestling.tv streaming service. It debuts on Wednesday, April 3rd at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. And here to talk about what looks to be a really interesting venture is a man who's well-seasoned with adventures in pro wrestling, Mr. Drew Cordero. Drew, how are you?
I'm excellent. Thank you so much for having me on and to be able to discuss Uncharted Territory.
You know, it's funny, you know, doing Wrestling Observer Live is a little different than doing a show on WrestlingObserver.com or really on any wrestling website in that we tend to get a lot more of a mainstream audience, just your WWE, UFC, your big show audience on this program. And sometimes when we're introducing people from who make their names and who do a lot of work on the independent scene, we kind of have to give a lot of background on them. And before the show, I'm thinking to myself, with 1.35 million YouTube subscriptions and, 50 million views a month, I'm not sure if we have to do that with you and Beyond Wrestling, but I guess I will, Mr. Cordero. Who are you and how did you get into this business?
Sure. I grew up in Rhode Island. I went to college at Emerson College in Boston, Massachusetts, integrated marketing communication with a focus on special event planning. I think a lot of times people kind of think like, oh, you know, professional wrestling, especially in the independent wrestling scene, like it's kind of a low risk point of entry compared to some other businesses. But, you know, I think that you have to have the education to back it up in order to really be successful. You know, when we first started in 2009, Beyond Wrestling was basically, it was backyard wrestling. You know, I had met a lot of professionally trained wrestlers that were still turning to backyard wrestling because of the creative freedom. And I thought there's got to be a way to still create an organization that allows for that creative freedom while also, you know, being professional about it, working with trained wrestlers, using professional equipment, doing it at a training facility. So when we first started in 2009, we actually didn't have fans at our shows. We taped the matches just with the wrestlers ringside. And what it did is it created this legitimate sense of competition because now everybody wanted to have the best match. You know, wrestlers know all of the tricks of the trade. So if you can put together a match that's going to impress your peers when it, you know, gets in front of a crowd, I think it would be extra impressive. So we started taping our matches for YouTube, really more so that these guys could kind of build like a video catalog of their work to be able to take to other promoters to then be like, hey, you know, maybe this is what you're used to seeing of me in other companies, but this is what I feel like I'm fully capable of without restrictions. And, you know, in 2009, a lot of our guys started getting bookings as a result of, you know, the platform we had created. In 2011, we did our first live event in Danbury, Connecticut. It wasn't really until 2013 that we really kind of like found our footing and figured out, you know, exactly what we were as a live event organization. And since then, it's pretty much been off to the races. We've seen constant growth year over year. There's been wrestlers that have really cut their teeth in Beyond Wrestling. you know, even guys that had like somebody like Donovan Dijak, who had started with Ring of Honor and won their top prospect tournament before coming to Beyond Wrestling. I mean, you know, when he gave his farewell speech, it was in a Beyond Wrestling ring before going to NXT. You know, and he credited Beyond Wrestling for really being able to help him find that connection with an audience and grow as a performer. So, you know, that freedom has been very instrumental in helping a lot of guys increase their popularity over the years, you know, female wrestlers as well. And, you know, we're just getting to a point now where we're coming up on the 10-year anniversary of Beyond Wrestling. And in some ways, I feel like we've pushed it as far as we can on a local level with monthly live events. And I really want to switch the focus to weekly live events, because I think we're going to be able to accomplish in a shorter period of time now, which is, you know, our ultimate goal is to give back to the wrestling scene. So we're going to be able to, you know, accomplish in 3 months what would normally take a year in terms of helping identify, well, who's the next up-and-coming wrestler, and, you know, kind of shoot them up the ladder.
Now, this Uncharted Territory show is really intriguing to me because you seem to be, like you said, you know, you want to give back and work with other people. You are bringing in, how is this working exactly? Because you seem to be bringing in people from all over the place. Are you working in conjunction with different groups on a different week? How is this actually working when you're going to have guys coming in from all sorts of different promotions, including AEW?
You know, we're still trying to piece it together. It's very much a reactionary venture where, you know, we're trying to make business decisions and see how that kind of dictates the creative components of it. But, you know, our goal is to have a special guest every week. One of my goals is to try and have a different wrestler debut every week. So I think that debuts are one of the most exciting parts of wrestling. There's just so much good talent out there, you know, and with a platform like Beyond Wrestling streaming live every week on Independent Wrestling TV. And also, you know, with 1.35 million YouTube subscribers, you know, we can take somebody that may be a relative unknown. For example, Keith Lee was wrestling in Texas for 10 years before he came to Beyond Wrestling. And with one match against Donovan Dijak, it was like he was, you know, it took 10 years to get to the point of becoming an overnight sensation. But his career really took off from there. And, you know, 2 years to the same weekend that he did his debut match for Beyond Wrestling, he was competing in his final match for us because he had signed his contract for NXT. So yes, we're working with different organizations. You know, we've got representatives from All Elite Wrestling for the first episode in SoCal Uncensored. We also have Japanese wrestling legend Masato Tanaka competing against David Starr. I know as we go further down the line, for example, for episode 2, we have Aussie Open, you know, one of the top international tag teams. But then we also have Gangrel. And, you know, I don't think that it's going to I want to steer away from kind of doing like the freak show wrestling for the most part. Not to say that it doesn't have its time and its place on a card, but, you know, I think a lot of the independent wrestling organizations right now are trying to capitalize on kind of like cute match combinations that may not necessarily produce the best matches. We are still very much about the in-ring quality of the performances, and it's just a matter of trying to find different combinations with newer talent and established talent that's going to give the fans the best show for their money. You know, it doesn't hurt to bring in a little bit of levity at some point, as long as that's not the entire focus of the program. So, you know, like fast forward to week 4, we've got the Butcher and the Blade, Andy Williams and Pepper Parks coming in, and, you know, some other competitors from that part of New York. So, you know, we can use this weekly platform to cycle in talent, have a rotating roster, and, you know, not be confined by some of the strengths of television wrestling, where we can't present like a completely fresh show every single week.
Do you have any concern, not even for just this show, but for Beyond in general, with the consolidation of talent that seems to be taking place because of bidding wars between AEW, New Japan, WWE, Impact, MLW, places like that? The independent scene obviously is going to be going through some flux. AEW, yourselves, all the other promotions regionally that are out there. Do you have any concern over that, or have any worry how this may affect the next 18 weeks coming up of television?
I mean, this is part of why we're doing it again is, you know, I can already tell you the next batch of guys and girls that we work with that are going to be gone. Maybe by the time that we get to our anniversary show, American Rana, at the end of July, you know, I'm not going to put them on blast because I don't want to hurt their chances from finding more work or, you know, if they have a lifelong dream to sign a major wrestling contract. I don't want to get in the way of that, but we are very much here to try and make sure that independent wrestling stays healthy and thrives in spite of all of these wrestlers that are getting signed to major contracts. that again is part of the reason that I wanted to switch this format, is because we can have a fluid roster, but we're also, whether it's a decision or not, it's the reality that we're going to be facing, is that, you know, week to week, there's going to be a handful of wrestlers that you will see on every episode, but for the majority of the episodes, it's going to be all about discovery. And hopefully, if we have a large audience tuning in every single week, then fans are going to be coming across wrestlers that they may not have seen prior to their debut for Beyond Wrestling. And then they're going to become fans of that wrestler, and they're going to want to follow their career. And then overall, it's going to help all of the independent wrestling organizations. You know, I know different companies are trying to do their part, like AAW in Chicago. You know, they're doing a series for YouTube where they're trying to, you know, identify and establish new talent. Obviously, everything that goes on with Game Changer Wrestling and the Joey Janela themed shows, you know, we've seen a lot of overnight sensation style performances with competitors like Jungle Boy, you know, just off the top of my head. We are all going to have to try and band together in different ways to replenish the independent wrestling scene, because more signings are coming and they're not going to stop.
Talking to Drew Cordero here on Wrestling Observer Live. I'm Mike Sempervivi. We'll be right back. All right, back on the show, Mike Sempervivi here with you, Wrestling Observer Live, being joined by Drew Cordero of Beyond Wrestling, who's here to talk about Uncharted Territory, the brand new weekly program coming to independentwrestling.tv beginning on Wednesday, April 3rd, and all sorts of other things, including running, if I dare say this, I don't want to jinx it, I believe the news has already been out there, it was announced on the Evolve show last night, Boston. For all of the pro wrestling that takes place over all of the years that has taken place in the Northeast, it's always been a hotbed. Guys running Fall River, guys running this, guys running that. Doesn't seem like a whole lot of guys run Boston, and you're going to be running Boston soon, correct?
We're going to be running Boston on Sunday, June 9th at Ned Devine's in Faneuil Hall, Quincy Market, pretty much right in the heart of Boston. You know, a historical site as well, and it almost seems too good to be true. You know, it's just incredible some of the opportunities that you're afforded, and things definitely changed for us when we hit that 1 million subscriber mark on YouTube. I felt like within the wrestling community, it kind of got overlooked, but in other communities, it's certainly still a very big deal. So I believe it's actually somebody that was just a fan that was coming to our shows, that had connections to the venue and knew that it's been our goal for years to be able to run a show in Boston proper, because when we've done shows in the Boston area before, we had done standalone shows at the Arts at the Armory in Somerville, Massachusetts, which is about 15 minutes outside of Boston. Really nice venue. And then we've also done joint shows with Evolve in Melrose, which is about 25 minutes out of Boston. Again, it's another great place to see professional wrestling. It's not Boston. I want to run Boston. And, you know, I had approached a couple different venues over the years. And the thing that's weird about Boston is that the nightclubs that would be like a good fit for the size of our audience, that wouldn't be maybe too expensive for us to run, have very low ceilings or very odd setups. You know, just as strange as the roadways are in Boston, so are the buildings. And we had approached another building that in the day had ECW, they had Lucha Vroom, they had Kaiju Big Battle, which, you know, is a similar setup at least. And we offered them, I want to say, in the range of maybe $15,000 to rent the room. And instead, they just pushed us off to a venue that ECW used to run in Revere. And it's just like, I don't know what it would take to get wrestling in Boston. But literally for years we've been trying. And the fact that, you know, it's kind of fallen into our laps with this unbelievable opportunity. And, you know, assuming it goes well on June 9th, we'll have many more opportunities in Boston to follow. I mean, this is a big, big deal for us.
I don't know if people realize how short, for all intents and purposes, you've been around. Beyond only started in 2009, and the success that you've had that has gotten, has it been a lot of good fortune? Because I'm amazed on how you ended up getting the deal with YouTube to increase your presence there and to help out with your presence there with the Post Game Network. They approached you about this. I mean, it seems to be you have had a lot of good fortune going on. How did you get this? You're coming in at the time where, I mean, I think YouTube's only been around since, what, like 2005, and it really only started to boom around the time that you started running Beyond. How have you been able to take YouTube and get the help that you've gotten and get it to where it's gotten? Because everybody, I'm sure, wants to imitate what you're doing, and nobody is close to what you're doing right now.
Well, it's been a lot of luck, but it's also been a lot of careful planning, and I'm not necessarily going to I might tell you some of the ingredients, but I'm not going to give you the whole recipe right now. but it took us, I mean, when we first started uploading matches to YouTube, we had to do it in multiple parts because you couldn't even put up a video more than 10 minutes. You know, obviously that's changed now where you can stream live for as long as you want. It's been a long road with YouTube. Again, when we started out, it was never about making money through YouTube. It was about getting the word out there for our performers so that they could find extra work in a way that they could present themselves in the way that they saw themselves. Instead of being like, you know, hey, you're the guy that's a comedian politician or you're wrestling as an ant, you know, now you can be the guy that is the stretcher. So it's a different opportunity to present yourself other than where you're getting work. But then the YouTube kind of caught on. And then somebody that was actually very instrumental was a gentleman by the name of Jericho120, who had wrestled for Evolve a little bit last year. But he was an entertainer, magician, that had also dabbled in wrestling in Michigan. And he was just like, you know, there's a lot of money to be made on YouTube. And I just didn't really get it. I was kind of like, you know, as a fan, if I see an ad and I sit through it, it makes me not want to watch the video. But obviously, you know, it's come to be, it's somewhat accepted at this point that that's part of the YouTube experience, and especially with ads that you can skip. And they found different ways with banner ads and stuff like that to still monetize their platform. And, you know, I remember when we first started, you know, it was the type of thing too, where it was like, if you have one song that you didn't license that's on your channel, they can shut your entire channel down. So like, I remember not wanting to monetize our channel because we had like a music video from like one of our first events. And I was like, you know, I just didn't get it. But YouTube has been very intuitive in the way that they've made changes over the years to become extremely friendly. So it's like, you know, nowadays you can just monetize an individual video so it won't jeopardize your entire channel. So if you still want to use unlicensed music, now the person whose music that you're using, they're going to get paid off your video. So stuff like that, you know, has really kind of opened things up for a lot of opportunities on YouTube. And I would say it took us about 8.5 years of uploading content to YouTube to get to the 100,000 subscriber mark. That was right around the time that we did a doubleheader with Progress in August of 2017. And by WrestleMania the following year, we were up to 250,000 subscribers. And I mean, since from last WrestleMania to this WrestleMania, we will have increased our subscription number by over 1 million subscribers. And part of that is luck, sure. Nobody really knows how the YouTube algorithm works. But I also changed up our content strategy. And, you know, people always ask me, what can we do to replicate your success? It takes a lot of time. It took us 10 years to get where we were. And that was with uploading content regularly. And when it really took off for us is when we changed our content strategy for multiple uploads a week. Sometimes multiple uploads a day. And it's not going to work for everybody because, you know, when you hit the million mark, you get assigned basically like a YouTube employee that has like best practices meetings with you a couple times a month. And, you know, some of the stuff that seems like it would work for like maybe somebody running a blog, that doesn't necessarily implement the same way or as effectively for professional wrestling. So like, not only are we as successful as we are, given that we're independent wrestling, which is like, you know, a relatively small interest in the grand scheme of things, but also by, you know, kind of ignoring YouTube's best practices to get to where we are at this point. So, you know, if anybody is out there that wants to aspire to be Beyond Wrestling, the only person that I've ever explained it to that's fully been able to implement it is Randy Carver, who runs Limitless Wrestling in Maine. And his YouTube channel has seen tremendous growth over the past year, and I think it'll continue to grow. And when people say, like, oh, Beyond Wrestling success can only be attributed to intergender wrestling, no, that's something that completely undermines everything that we've done over the last 10 years. And I mean, sure, some of our intergender videos are our most popular on YouTube, but you know, we were uploading intergender matches for like 9 years before we got to the point where our YouTube channel really exploded. So, you know, it's all about the different combination of content strategies. You know, the intergender matches are maybe about 1/10 or 1/8 of the overall content that we've put up. But what we've started doing is to get fans in the habit of, you know, knowing, hey, we're going to be the destination to watch live wrestling on Wednesday nights. At 7:30 every Wednesday, we've been doing a best of. So either best of matches from like 2013, 2014, or putting up our best show of the year. You know, and on the outside of things, it may seem like it's doing disappointing numbers because it's like maybe 40 or 50 people watching live, you know, which is not even a drop in the bucket when you're looking at 1.35 million subscribers. But that's because we built up our channel for VOD content. So now it's like we need to completely build from scratch that audience of people that are going to be tuning in from our YouTube channel to be watching live on Wednesday nights as well. And, you know, we've done a good deal of marketing, but, like, the promotions are really going to start with the first episode. I look at the first episode on April 3rd of Uncharted Territory as the starting point. And it's going to be interesting to see how we can incorporate YouTube. Maybe it's a half-hour pre-show at 7:30, you know, that's going to give the rundown for the card and maybe an exclusive match. So that way, you know, people can be prepared when they switch over to IWTV. Maybe it's going to be something similar to, like, a watch-along experience like WWE did this past weekend, except, you know, somebody said the F-word and that was a problem. You know, on our channel, it wouldn't be as much of a problem because we're, you know, geared more towards adults. But, you know, I mean, I could do an entire program just about the YouTube stuff. It blows my mind how many people we're able to reach. And there's so many people that don't even put two and two together that what they've watched on YouTube that's Beyond Wrestling is the same Beyond Wrestling that does shows in New England.
Well, just on the intergender thing, have you... Because intergender wrestling has been going on for as long as there's been wrestling, because in training centers and in places where you don't have access to a lot of talent, there was always going to be, you know, a mix of people wrestling. It just seemed to be in the last several years, it's become a more of a blown up and accepted thing. But I guess in about 90 seconds or so, what's it been like? Did you get any pushback about this? Because I know it can be a very polarizing thing. And has there ever been any concern about having the intergender stuff?
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, it is a polarizing thing. But my thought process has always been, you know, equality in wrestling. You know, there's no women that are running schools for the most part. The most part, you know, you're going to be, whether you're a male or female wrestler, you're going to be training with a male wrestler. The reason we started really focusing on intergender wrestling is because when we started 10 years ago, there weren't enough good women's wrestlers to put together, like, solid women's matches. So if you had a female competitor wrestling a male competitor, the female wrestler is better for it after the end of the match. And I hope that doesn't come off as being sexist. You know, I'm just being pragmatic. That's what the deal was. And when we found a lot of success, you know, people say, like, oh, you tell the same story every time. It's an underdog story. Not necessarily. We've had matches where, you know, the women are bigger than the men, and the men are fighting from underneath in order to be able to, you know, overcome the odds. It's just all about how it's been presented. And for the majority of our run at Beyond Wrestling, it's always been presented just as pure sport, the intergender matches. If you're presenting as something else, I could see how that would raise issues. And some, you know, it's just as, I don't know. I don't want to get into the whole thing as far as, you know, what's acceptable, what's not acceptable, whether it's, you know, a tampon spot or throwing up on somebody or stuff like that. Whatever's going to get people watching. But we stay away from that with our presentation.
Drew Cordero's here with me from Beyond Wrestling, Uncharted Territory. I'm Mike Sempervivi. This is Wrestling Observer Live. Before we get to what you got coming up, because you do have a lot that's swirling around this show and a lot of events that will be taking place. Last segment, we were kind of talking about just the YouTube visibility and all that sort of stuff. And you talked about, obviously, the show is going to be on every week beginning on Wednesday, April 3rd on independentwrestling.tv. For those people out there who don't know, this is an incredible hub for many independent groups across the nation. It's only, I believe, $10 a month, and they always have a deal going on where you can get something. But talk about the relationship with IWTV and what they're doing to try to get a lot of groups out there, like Black Label Pro, Scenic City Invitational. You guys, there have been plenty that they host on there, and they really provide a hell of a service for wrestling fans.
I mean, the bottom line is that Independent Wrestling TV is going to make good on the promise that Flow Slam couldn't keep, you know, getting fans all excited for this idea of unity, where there's going to be this one place that you can subscribe on a monthly basis to watch as much independent wrestling as possible. I know that Independent Wrestling TV is constantly looking for more partners, constantly looking to do more live streams. I mean, I think last year they did close to 80 streams. I think this year it's going to, especially our intention is to continue the Uncharted Territory series after the first 18 weeks. It was just the easiest way to handle it. For ticketing purposes. But I mean, I would anticipate there's going to be well over 100 streams this year. I mean, for $10 a month, again, these are the companies that you need to support if you want to continue to see independent wrestling thrive. Because these are where the next generation of wrestlers are going to be cutting their teeth. I mean, there's been some incredible partners, and I'm hoping that we're going to start seeing more crossover too. I think the idea of a touring champion with the Independent Wrestling Championship is cool. I know that Orange Cassidy has been afforded a lot more opportunities this year than at any other point in his career. as the independent wrestling champion, and I would imagine that trend is going to continue.
Do you have any concern at all with Orange Cassidy being a very popular and charismatic figure? Do you have any concern at all with him losing that title to Brian Alvarez on WrestleMania weekend?
You know what? I think that would be a little bit fitting, actually. You know, I would be interested in seeing that. I mean, look, I have it on good authority that when Brian Alvarez teamed with Tom Lawler against the Rock and Roll Express, it was one of the most watched shows and Powerbomb TV had ever run. So, I mean, yeah, maybe we should strap up Alvarez and get a nice little run, get those promo codes in. I mean, I'm not going to say that the match might be fixed, but.
Well, I'm not sure if he's even in his advanced age going to be able to keep up with the blistering pace that Orange Cassidy, which let me actually ask you about him too, because talk about another, in some ways, a polarizing figure on the independent wrestling scene with a lot of the old heads who don't get it, a lot of the new heads who can't believe that the old heads don't get it. What is Orange Cassidy about? Because it's easy to look at David Starr or watch him wrestle or watch other people and go, I got it. Jordan Grace, I got it. She can kick ass and all this other stuff. Number one, what is Orange Cassidy about? And two, for those who don't know, and two, what is it about him that gets people, that people like him so much?
I don't understand how the old guys don't understand it. It's like the most simple tactic. It's mind games. He lulls his opponent into a false sense of security. And then he does all this athletic stuff because you're thinking that he's not taking the match seriously. It's like, it's really just that simple. So for people that don't get it, they're overthinking it way too much. You know, he comes with a lackadaisical approach. He's really casual about it. And then he turns it up when you least expect it. He's a gifted performer. He's an incredible athlete. He's a really nice guy. You know, he's been doing this for a very long time. I'm glad that he's finally going to get his due. But, you know, even just seeing the match with Velveteen Dream at Evolve yesterday, it wasn't one of those matches where those guys had to kill themselves in order to make the crowd happy. The crowd was happy just by the time the entrances had ended. And then it was just a cool vibe in the room until the match finished. You know, working smarter, not working harder. But he can definitely turn it up and go when the situation calls for it.
Now, we've talked about the TV show coming up, but obviously you run shows constantly. What do you have coming up that's going to be not only before but after the weekly TV show and other shows that people can get while they're watching IWTV?
Sure. Quick plug. I mean, St. Patrick's Day, Sunday, we're going to be making our debut in Syracuse, doing a joint show with Wild Zero. But a big show, kind of a unique, you know, I was talking about maybe some of the weirder match combinations. It has its time and its place, and I feel like the ultimate platform for that is like a lethal lottery tag format where you can take wrestlers from all walks of life and just throw them into some really strange combinations. So we're actually going to be debuting in North Kingstown, Rhode Island, at the Wide World of Indoor Sports on May 5th, Cinco de Mayo, with a lethal lottery, some tag matches, which will lead to the Beyond Battle Bowl, as it were. You know, of course, we'll announce in the coming days what will be on the line for the winner of that, you know, unique tournament. But I've got to say, we've been very successful in Rhode Island this year as we've linked up with a local partner who can really help us reach a new audience through kind of their different platforms. It's a gentleman by the name of John. His organization is the Sports Entertainment Experience. And John's also the owner of a Fee Sandwich Company. We did an outdoor show in their parking lot. And that was a show that was the sole focus of that show was kind of silly wrestling, because we had like Joey Ryan, Swoggle, Colt Cabana, an entire card up and down of just doing funny matches, which was really cool because it was something that I always wanted to tackle. And through that, you know, we've been able to build a really good relationship with John. And by being a very successful restaurant owner in the area, you know, he's got so much traffic coming through his restaurant that just being able to put up flyers and posters, you know, and reach out to people within the community has done so much to boost our visibility in Rhode Island, where, again, we had been struggling for a little bit. So, you know, I think we had 340 people in the building for the event that we did back in February at the Varnum Armory in East Greenwich. The Lethal Lottery is going to be taking place in an indoor soccer stadium, which is definitely, like, we like to go to the nightclubs. We like to go to the bars. We like to go to the places that do their own audio and lighting. We may or may not have, an enormous opportunity coming up for American Rana, where it'll focus more on, like, you know, hey, this is how you have to stage the room and different things that we're not necessarily used to. So May 5th is going to be a good test for us. You know, if we have this enormous arena, which obviously, you know, unless we draw 15,000 people standing, we're not going to fill. And, you know, as well as we're doing lately, even that seems to be a bit unrealistic. You know, it's going to be a good test run for perhaps what we have lined up for the coming months. So pretty excited about that. You know, I would anticipate that Anthony Green, who's doing the Retribution Tour, he's been wrestling a lot of throwback wrestlers. He actually wrestled Lisa Marie Varon back in February, which was awesome. You know, he's going to be wrestling another wrestling legend at that show. So we'll have all the information on that at beyondwrestlingonline.com in the coming days.
He's a trip. I've seen him a couple times now at the Monster Factory. He has really got his thing down, and apparently is very fluent in Carney, as I saw the Guinness thing sent that out about speaking in Carney, the lost art there. He's certainly a character. The lineup that you sent out, a lineup for food, and I had to get a kick because growing up, you know, in the 80s and 90s, when you went to an independent wrestling show, if they had even had flat warm soda and a really bad hot dog, you should consider yourself lucky. You have lineups of calzones, of pulled pork, macaroni and cheese, desserts. Where did this come from? Where did this idea come from to make this food and to really bring up the concessions game for pro wrestling?
Well, I mean, you know, it kind of started at my house in the backyard, and we would have people over to wrestle on, like, the tires and foam and tarp that we would throw on the ground. And, you know, my mother, she loved to cook for people. So, like, even when my grandparents were alive, like, they would cook, too. Like, I remember, like, Ricky Shane Page stayed over my house once, and, like, he woke up, and my mom was like, oh, I'm making Italian grinders for breakfast. Like, I don't even know in what world that's even acceptable. But, like, you know, those are the type of things where, like, the legend starts to grow about, like, the cooking and stuff like that. So when we started Beyond Wrestling, when we started doing events in Bridgewater, Massachusetts, at a VFW hall, or it was actually Knights Club, it's splitting hairs here, but they had a full kitchen. So it was like, well, hey, this is a component of the shows that we can incorporate is kind of the homemade cooking. When we got to Fet Music in Providence in 2013, we were equipped at that point to basically do, like, catering. So, like, the food could be cooked off-site and then, you know, held at proper temperatures and stuff like that and served day of the event. And that was when, you know, the gentleman that ran the Championship Melt grilled cheese truck had contacted me. So, you know, he would set up his truck outside. We would do the food inside. And after about a year, you know, he said, hey, I'm going to be calling it quits. I just want to let you know that I'm not going to be the shows anymore. And the food truck had become such a big part of it at that point that I was just like, yo, is there any way that we can acquire the food truck, which is something he hadn't considered. But then, without boring you, you get into different rules and regulations, and there's so much bureaucracy and red tape. It just becomes kind of a nightmare. So it's like, when we go to a place like Melrose Memorial Hall, they have a full kitchen. And, you know, our permitting from Rhode Island translates to Massachusetts in this instance, luckily. And so, you know, we're able to make all this fresh food on site. And, you know, these are recipes that over the years, like my mother used to work in her brother's restaurant, like in the 70s. That was in, like, you know, Newport and Jamestown areas like that. Sandwich shops, pizza shops, you know, before, you know, eventually becoming like a full-on restaurant. So, like, there's definitely, like, that family history. And that's kind of one of those components that makes it, like, a unique experience where you're getting still that family experience. Of course, if you're acting out of the show, my mother's going to get right in your face because she punked some guy out yesterday who was too drunk. And then, like, basically he had to be restrained until the police could come to tell him that he wasn't allowed to drink any more beer. So, you know, you never know what you're going to get. You're going to get a calzone. You might get popped in the face. I mean, that's part of the Beyond Wrestling experience, I guess.
Have you ever had a situation where things have gotten out of control at a bar or a venue? Because, again, people being tightly packed and liking to drink and testosterone and estrogen can. Has there been any crazy events?
You know, yesterday's is about as far as it's ever gone, to be honest with you.
That's good.
One of the reasons we stopped running shows at the venue in Providence was I felt like they had an affinity of maybe serving guests maybe a little bit more than they should have. And that's not my call to make because it's not my venue, but it is my call to make where if I feel like it's creating an unsafe environment, then I might not bring my product to your venue because I don't want my fans to feel unsafe in any capacity. And again, it being tightly packed in and standing, I mean, you know, there's a lot more room for error given our standing room format than maybe if you're seated. So, you know, I mean, we've seen incidents where like maybe people are passed out in the stalls and stuff like that. But as far as being like aggressive or trying to pick a fight or anything like that, last night was like the only instance, and that dude was messed up before he even got there. Like, if you're going to pregame, like pregame responsibly, don't come to the show blackout and then just trying to get crazy because, you know, the bartenders aren't going to want to serve you. They want to keep you safe too. Their jobs are on the line. I mean, God forbid that guy, you know, even get served one beer and then he goes and gets in a car accident. Like, you know,
it's like dram shop laws.
So, no, we very, very, very rarely have like incidents that are worth discussing at our shows. We have a very well-behaved crowd. People always think like, oh my God, they're going to see wrestling. They're going to get all worked up. They're going to want to start like fighting in the streets. It's just like, no, like we're at a point where, you know, we get a lot of hipsters, a lot of, you know, 18 to 35 single men and women. We don't get the families. We don't get the kids. We don't get like the older people that, you know, are getting all hyped up off of it. We draw a crowd that wants to enjoy the performance and have a good time and have a few drinks. Very responsible crowd.
Uncharted Territory, Wednesday, April 3rd, 8 p.m. Who's going to be on there?
Boy, you got SCU versus Team Pazuzu, Masato Tanaka versus David Starr, the Beaver Boys. You're going to have an open challenge. You're going to see MJF versus Kimberly, Josh Briggs versus Chris Statlander in a Dream Partner tag team match. Orange Cassidy and a partner against Jordan Grace and a partner.
That's awesome. If you're up in that area and want tickets to the show, you can get a season pass. Go to beyondwrestlingonline.com. And I got to ask, is the lookmondofans.com still active?
I think it still redirects. Yeah, Joey. It was Joey Styles, of all people, you know, taking advice from that guy that told us to drop that website. I thought it was fun. I thought it was kitschy. So I think that I still pay the $10 every month or every year to make sure that it stays active. But yeah, the season passes are the only way to get tickets for that first episode. You can't make it. You got to watch live on Independent Wrestling TV because that is going to be the kickoff for WrestleMania weekend.
That is awesome, Drew. I want to thank you very much for coming on.
Thank you.